Hello and welcome to the SoToxipod. This is the first episode of season four, kind of going along with the switch of the years into 2023. And we are more than happy to welcome Paul Henshaw to the SoToxipod to talk a bit about his new music, his journey towards the new music, and stuff coming up in this exciting year. So
hello.
Hi, Paul. Hi, hey. Toby.
Hello.
We're back.
We're back. Exactly. Happy New Year to those who celebrate. Paul, instead of you doing an intro and introducing yourself, I think I'll just start right off with the first question, which is, what are your thoughts on potato salad?
I enjoy potato salad a lot, especially, and this may be slightly weird, and it may be a Scottish thing, because my girlfriend's family are Scottish. But in their potato salad, it's predominantly egg as opposed to potato. And I really, really like that. It's my favorite type of potato salad with not a lot of potato in it. So yeah, I'm a fan.
Fair enough. And is there anyone special in your life who makes a particularly good potato salad?
My girlfriend's mother.
There you go.
There we go.
Now that's what I was fishing for.
Now you can proudly show it. But yeah, maybe for a further introduction, you are on the SoToxipod. We met at a Pet Needs show a few months ago and in Cologne, which was cool. And we got into chatting at the merch booth. And yeah, now we're here. So tell us a bit about who you are.
I am a predominantly solo singer, songwriter. I think a good way to describe what I do, somebody really cool wrote an interview with us once, and they called the music that I play riot folk, and I thought, I like that. I kind of like that, because a lot of people get called folk punk and, you know, all that sort of stuff, and I kind of like the riot folk thing. So I ran with that for a little while, but it's just songs. And I'm really selfish because I write an awful lot of songs about me. Because I can do those truthfully. if I'm writing about someone else, I end up lying out my ass all the time. So that's me. I tour around quite a lot, do a lot of sort of individual gigs and small tours. I've got two duets that I'm in as well that play my songs. So I've got a duet with a guy called Dan Booth, who's in Ferocious Dog, if you've ever heard of Ferocious Dog, and a duet with a lady called Hannah, who is in a band called The Ley Lines. And then I've got a full band of my own as well, which does very noisy versions of what I do with an acoustic, not quite so noisily.
Yeah, I was going to bring it up throughout the interview in any case. You're quite difficult to nail down on Spotify or on any like streaming platform.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel there's multiple accounts that kind of have the Henshaw name and your face in them. I don't know if that's because you have kind of four things going on, or if it's because you maybe have two accounts and are only really taking care of one of them, but I thought that was really funny.
There's two. The last Spotify Henshaw in capital letters is me.
Yeah.
Henshaw with a dollar sign as the S is not me.
Not you. Yeah.
He is an American rapper.
I take you know him quite well.
No. However, I've got a gig in February this year, me and Dan Booth, we've got a gig, and the venue's actually listed that guy up on Bands for Towns.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Bands in Town or whatever. So apparently this guy's coming over from the States, and he's going to rap with my violinist. So
great to see.
Yeah, I'm going to go.
Are you going to go and watch the show?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to go and heckle. I'm going to be one of those guys.
Yeah.
Where's the other half of the act? Come on, I paid for this.
I don't know these songs. And then there's a Spotify account that is Paul Henshaw and the Scientific Simpletons, which is my band. Basically, that I ran up to COVID, when COVID kicked in. And we didn't see each other for a while, and I wrote a whole load of other stuff. I actually wrote a band album first, and then realized COVID was going on even longer, so I ended up writing a solo album, and then recording the solo album, and that's what I put out last year, and that's what I've been promoting. Mm-hmm. And then... And the band album still isn't recorded, which was the one that I wrote first. But then I put a whole new band together for that. So
that will come out. Quick interjection as a just topic of interest. When you say band album and solo album, is it just types of songs that you're writing, or is it actually a whole different process for you? If you're writing, are you writing for multiple instruments if it's a band album, or is it just different like states of mind approaching those projects?
It's different in as much as I'm hearing a band when I'm writing it. So I'm putting space in what I do. So I'm thinking, right, okay, there'd be a really cool drum fill there. And I'm not quite sure what it might be, but I've got an idea, or there's a specific vibe for this, or anything that you can do with music, if you like. Yeah. I've never written a solo album until this one, when I sat down and thought, right, okay, COVID's going on an awful long time. I should really write and record something that I can put out, because I need to put something out. It had been 3 years or 4 years or whatever it was since the last album. Mm-hmm. So I needed to put something. And to be honest, I put an awful lot of work into a load of songs. And then some worked, and then from the same thing, the solo record, when I recorded the solo album, three or four of those songs were very, very much, as soon as I'd recorded them, I went, wouldn't they sound great with a band? You know? So the band now do versions of those, and one of them, a song called No Longer Proud, that's gonna be on a band EP that I've got coming up.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's something to get into later.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I wanted to talk to you about No Longer Proud, actually. Because it's for me, it was kind of at that point that I kind of, because I'd struggled for a while to kind of pin down, as you said, what music I'm listening to. And then I listened to that, and I that's where it kind of clicked. And I don't know if we want to get into it now, but for me, so I wouldn't have called you what did you say earlier? That your friend called you riot punk?
Riot folk.
Riot folk. Okay. I looked this up. I would have called you cow punk, country punk.
Yeah.
Because No Longer Proud felt so country to me.
Yeah.
Not in like the way you play, but in the thought of it.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. And I really liked it for that. Because I'm a huge punk. I am a huge punk fan, but I'm not a huge country fan. But then that was kind of the point where I realized, oh, okay, this is fun. This is really cool.
I think in terms of generalizing, I should write more songs about my dog leaving me and definitely be a bit more country.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah.
No, there is a lot of beer content, but that can also be upped.
No, it's I think there's a country element to everything as well, because there's lots of, kind of say, like, folk is a really good sort of storytelling vehicle musically. Country is based around, I mean, a lot of the stories are quite similar, but it's a storytelling, and all music storytelling, but I kind of think folk is the main driver behind it, and maybe that's because there's just, you can't hide behind quite so much distortion or big drum kits and stuff like that. You know, it normally stands fairly much on its own with an acoustic and somebody warbling away in the background.
Yeah.
Well, which in a sense is, I'd imagine, kind of where music originated from to some degree, right? Because storytelling and and music are pretty much just separated by rhythmic sound.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I could well imagine that at some point, you know, music and rhythm has probably existed for much longer than I can even imagine, but that at some point people got together and decided to really actively make like folk music as a storytelling device, right? To have something go on in the background and a communal situation around the fire where a story is told is accompanied by some sort of very simple hide spun over wood or something.
Yeah, I completely get that. I guess it's why I'm a folk fan, really, at heart. You know, I like stories. So, however they're wrapped up.
I wonder if someone were to look up the difference between country and folk, what the answer would be, like the specific answer, because it's kind of hard to come up with a direct one.
I don't think there will be a clearly defined, simple answer.
There never is.
Because music genres and subgenres are already so vast and so complicated. I find it, you know, because you can look up a definition of what is this band, and I'll tell you, they're this, and then you look that up and you go, I don't agree here. And then you can make an argument for any band belonging to most things. And yeah. I really don't think there's going to be any clear answer on any of this, which is part of the beauty.
It is. I'm still waiting, though, for Slayer to win Country Single of the Year award.
Slayer?
Okay. I think Slayer would be fantastic at the Country Music Awards. It would be great. All these people in like Stetsons and like
Slipknot would be good with the masks.
There'd be people going, not sure what's going on with the masks, but boy, do I love that guy's overalls.
Yeah. 10 people will leave that night having a new fetish. In terms of like, okay, you say folk is your main, like, something has a big place in your heart. But all, like when I listened, I didn't listen to all of your discography, but I tried to, you know, pick up some sounds from all the albums. And going all the way back to I Refuse to Sink, which came out in 2014, the first song on the record, I think, is I Am Nikki Sixx. There's a couple other tracks throughout your discography, and maybe it's just by chance that I selected them. But they all have amazing electric guitar work that does not at all remind me of folk or country. They remind me of the big 70s and 80s bands. And then also some of the vocal ranges, like from Fugazi to Talking Heads, there's things there. So it seems like you've had a lot more influences than just that main part of folk that have all guided you consistently throughout. Because it seems like you've explored a lot in all those albums.
Yeah, I never quite decided on what I like.
It's cool though. But what are your main influences then? Outside of folk, maybe, like, I guess.
Okay. I'll I am the, like, my guilty pleasure band is Radiohead. Because I just think they're like, what the sounds that they produce, it's just really beautiful music. Yeah. And then the Decemberists. So that's probably kind of where the country lilt comes in. But I mean, I don't think there's a lyric or a chord in any song that the Decemberists have written that I don't think is spot on. It's right. There isn't a song that I go, oh, no, I lie. There's one song that I don't like. Yeah, and it's a song called My Red Right Ankle. And they've got 7 or 8 albums that are perfect, and this one song that is dog shit.
And so that's the one we'll play at the end of this episode.
Yeah. But you know, I love the Decemberists. I like, and they're really, I think they're really uncool to like, but I love Biffy Clyro. I think
Oh, great.
Fun.
I do not like Biffy Clyro.
No, I have a couple of records. I've been listening
like
a lot to them the last few weeks.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we were really chatting about them not too long ago.
Cool. I think what they do, I'd probably say they're my favorite band. Yeah, because they take I like music that's a bit of a challenge to listen to. So I liked Nirvana, but I liked In Utero. I wasn't such a fan of Nevermind. I was a fan of Nevermind, you know, but In Utero was more difficult. So I kind of like some of the weird time signatures that Radiohead write in, and you know, different band members playing in different time signatures and stuff like that. But then Biffy do that, and then they put these big fuck off guitars in as well. And it's like, okay, right, I've come home. it's great. I like them. But you know, all the way back to my dad was a drummer. He was a jazz drummer, and my mum was my mum was a singer. So I got took to lots and lots of jazz gigs when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So there's little bits of like jazz that got trickled, not much, but bits that if I like it, I like it. And if I don't, just sounds like jazz to, you know, but then
interesting.
Yeah, I got into like bands like Iron Maiden and stuff like that, and Therapy. Therapy were like my band in the 90s or whenever they were going and stuff like that. So yeah, it's lots and lots of influences from the Beatles or Slayer to Sinatra. I get influences from anywhere.
I think a song off that same album, the one I mentioned earlier, a song called An Epic Story, another one I have noted down, that it's really, really cool. And it reminds me of Pink Floyd a bit, the guitars in there. I don't know if that's what you're going for, but it's pretty cool, actually. It has these long bended notes and just kind of floats you throughout the song.
Do you want to hear two funny stories about that song?
Go for it.
And neither of the people involved are going to think they're funny, but I think they're funny. Right. So number one, the drummer had a collapsed disc in his back.
Yeah.
And the drum beat in that song is the same all the way through it. Okay. And he insisted on playing it, and it's from this side of the kit all the way around to this side of the kit.
Great.
And I was sat on a chair in front of him, looking at him, talking him through the song while he played it to like a click. And he kept looking at me going, that's got to be the end of the song. And I'm thinking, we're only halfway through it. And I'm going, no, keep going. Right. And man, he hated me by the end of it. We never played it live. We never played that song live because he despised me so much. And then the guitarist was a guy called Rob, who he used to be the technical director at Gibson in the States a few years ago. And he came back and he worked for Faith Guitars and Patrick Egel Guitars. Then he set up on his own. So he started building these like super expensive Strats and super expensive Telecasters, and well, like sort of £7,000 or £8,000 each.
Jesus.
So when we turned up at the studio, he literally brought every guitar that he had. So we had these flight cases with 10 guitars in, and they were like 80, 90 grand's worth in each one. And he wheeled four or five of these things in, and I'm going, we got like nearly half a million pounds worth of guitars. And then we ended up playing the guitar part on a Squire Strat through a 1-watt practice amp.
For anyone who doesn't know a Squire, do you want to elaborate on what type of class guitar that is?
Poor.
I think it's the cheap Fender brand, right?
It's the cheap Fender, yeah. Yeah, it's the cheaper. Yeah. It's the one that doesn't stay in tune. So the... like all of that guitar. And then obviously because he goes to guitar shows and shows his guitars and people buy them, yeah, or they live in them or sail on them. I mean, they're that expensive. It's stupid. So he has a rack of Black Star amps in this one room, and we tried and tried and tried to get a sound and we couldn't get it. So yeah, it was a Squire Strat, a blue one, Squire Strat with a white pick guard and a 1 watt practice amp that we mic'd up. And we got that sound.
That's funny. That's good. And you hear that a lot, actually, or more often than you'd think, that people use older or crappier equipment because they want a certain sound.
Yeah.
And the sound doesn't necessarily have to be clean, which is funny. Yeah, funny. That guy must have been proud.
he was not happy. And also, I think when he listened back to the solo, he realized that he hadn't played all of it.
Oh.
Because we recorded about 15 solos, and then we chopped a solo together from, because I knew that the drummer hated me. We were never going to play it live, so he didn't have to play it live. It was just we needed to make the record sound as good as we could. So, yeah.
I think it came out great, and I think you should try and imagine a way to get that back on the stage. It'd be really cool to see that kind of song.
So the thing is now, the band lineup that I've got could nail it, absolutely nail it as well, because they're like monstrously talented. I am like here to their level of talent. You know, I write it and I pay for it and I thump an acoustic guitar or an electric sometimes. But their level of talent. Now, you mentioned like No Longer Proud before. The violin line in that, my guitarist plays that, which is just, and he plays it note for note. It's an insane bit of guitar work that he does. You know, and he doesn't even blink. I was always worried that, you know, with drummers, sometimes they stray a little bit with tempo and you get like a gig tempo versus a recorded song tempo. And he's like, I'll just bring it on, play it as fast as you want. I'm like, I can't make my fingers move that fast and not make the right sound. So yeah, he's cool. He's a good lad. Sorry, dinner.
Sounds really good. So that means that your plans for this coming year, coming off of a kind of COVID solo album and to put your songwriting energy somewhere, now you're shifting your energy into the new band. You found the members, and I know for a fact there's, as you said earlier, a new EP coming out, and that is gonna be with bigger guitars. So maybe we'll be seeing more of that on stage then, if that guitar artist, I guess we call him, joining.
Yeah, there's a 5-piece band. So there's, I play about 50-50 acoustic and electric. There's another guitarist, a bassist, a keyboard player. He's a keyboard player primarily, but he's got a voice like Rag and Bone Man and can play every instrument known to humankind. So he's more a multi-instrumentalist. And he's the guy who produces me. So he's... from producing and adding layers to things, it's like, do you want to join the band? He's like, oh, hell yeah. Yeah, let's go play it live. and then drummer, obviously. But yeah,
cool.
It is cool. It's a very cool sounding band. I like how it's going.
And what's the tour plans? Like playing live in terms, how is that going to, any dates already in the book?
Yeah. I got loads and loads of solo dates. The band predominantly this year, it's kind of like a festival year, with a few, so not a tour as such. So like the EP that's going to come out in May is a band EP, and we'll do some promotional shows around that, and then I'll tour it solo as well, and then we've got like a few, I think maybe 5 or 6 band festival slots. And then we're working on something for the end of the year now, because if the EP goes well, there's an album written. It's a case of getting in and putting things together, which we're kind of doing already. I mean, to be honest, the band album is demoed already. And we're using those obviously as the base for the EP. So a couple of songs off the album will be on the EP with a Perfect. Band version of a solo song, and a couple of acoustic versions that I'm doing of different songs. So yeah, it'll be.
Sounds like an exciting project. How long has this been in the works then? It seems like you've gotten a huge jump on a lot of the work. And it's only January, 4th? So
yeah.
It's basically done.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish. I started writing it in 2019, probably.
Yeah.
I'd sort of written and didn't quite know where I was going to place things. And then COVID happened and I spoke to a few band members. I mean, we'd basically demoed the whole album, pretty much the whole album, maybe 12 songs. And I think there's like 17 that I wrote for it. So we demoed 12 and never been in the same room as each other.
Right.
I'd been in the same room as everybody because I knew them all. But the first time we got together was and played live was the rehearsal. No. We did. There was two band gigs this year. And the first one, the drummer who lives in Sweden, couldn't work his calendar out, or he made a mistake because he booked a flight 2 days before the rehearsal that we were supposed to do to go back to Sweden. So I had to get a depth drummer for the first gig, which was a lot of fun. And it really was a lot of fun because he was like an amazing depth drummer, really threw himself into it. And he's a real he's a rock drummer. So he thumps fuck out the kid, and it worked really, really well. And my drummer doesn't hit things quite as hard. So it was almost like, okay, well, we're just kind of throttling off a little bit for these. But he was there for the second gig. And the first time we were all together was at soundcheck for the second gig that the band did. So yeah, that was the first time.
Wow. So yeah. You jumped in at the deep end.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to.
But playing live is a lot different than recording.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, it's a big vibe together. But I guess if you had seen them all before, so.
Yeah.
And in the making.
Yeah, and four of us had played together. It was
fair enough. You know,
by that. But the time, the first time five of us were on stage making a noise at the same time as soundcheck. Which
fair enough.
If it had been down to the headline band, we wouldn't have got a soundcheck. We only got a sound check because we turned up before and sound checked and then cleared the stage without them knowing.
Yeah. Okay.
That sounds unusual, or does that happen a lot?
No, I was just like, shit, we've got to play together. We've got to play together. So yeah. I managed to convince the venue to open the doors at like 3 o'clock so we could get in and play.
Mm-hmm.
Got to be done.
I wonder why they wouldn't want you to play. Were they scared that you were going to steal their thunder? Because no. I remember you mentioning to us how people have mentioned it to you before, or how sometimes as a pre-band, the main act worries that, you know, they only want you to kind of warm up the crowd a bit, not like really rock it, which is what Pet Needs didn't do with you.
No, I think that the thing is, I learned a lot from the few gigs that I'd done with Pet Needs, because number one, they're literally the nicest people in music. Yeah. And I mean, and I definitely learned from, I think I did 4 gigs with them in the UK. So there was 2 duet gigs that Johnny and George did on their borrowed toothpaste thing. And they were like, one was a house gig, one was a memorial hall in my local town. Mm-hmm. And then I did 2 gigs on the Nick Alexander tour that they did early part of the year, which is where we met the first time. And I learned a lot, and I think they'd sort of taken things from their tours with Frank Turner, is that, you know, and Johnny said this on stage, that, you know, as an opening act, as a support act, you're gate crashing somebody else's party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And straight away, that landed with me and went, that's exactly what it is. It altered the way that I looked at support slots. Because we're all kind of in competition. You do go into it thinking, you know, I've really got to knock this out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
But then to do what you paid for, yeah, you can knock it out of the park, but you're there to warm up a crowd for someone else.
Yeah.
And I swear this year my mentality's changed at support gigs as opposed to headline gigs, and I enjoy them more. I feel much more comfortable, you know. So I don't think, going back to that band gig, it was literally just a case of timing that they couldn't get to the venue.
Gotcha. Yeah.
In a time that would have allowed us to have anything like a sound check.
Yeah.
So knowing that we needed one, I spoke to the venue and said, please, we can be really shit tonight, or we can have played a bit.
Yeah.
So that
sounds like
win-win.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Dan Booth as one of your, yeah, I guess, other frequent collaborators that you've worked with over the years.
Yeah.
And you have basically a joint album with him. Mm-hmm. Revisit as well.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it's on that album. I think it is. My notes might be a little messed up. First, I want to give a shout out to 2 tracks for our listeners off that album, Churches of Rome and Throwing Lines, which are both just 6 songs for like very different reasons.
Thank you.
And I just want to recommend them to everybody. The actual question I have for you is a story you told us when we met about a person who asked you for a cigarette while you were on the street.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've told this story 100 times because you told it to us at a merch stand, and I'm sure others have gotten into that conversation with you before. I'm not sure, but you wrote a song about it, and I by chance listened to that song that I think where that story is referenced, if I'm not mistaken. And I wonder if it's off that album.
No, it's not.
No, it's Nice Folk. It's the first song of...
Yeah,
of Nobody Nice Cares, Work Harder. It's really it's good. Nice Folk. I was going to bring it up.
Then I got it confused. But what
song did you think it was?
I don't know, because I only wrote down the 2 tracks off the album that I just wanted to mention. And then I remember listening to it, but I guess I placed it in the wrong album. What song is it, Toby?
It's Nice Folk. It's the opening song for Nobody Cares, Work Harder.
Yeah.
Okay, which I want to shout out because it's really fun. It's really, really good.
It's a really fun song.
And the fun thing about it is you told us that story, and I arrived late to your pre-band because I had to drive there quite far away.
Yeah.
I arrived late. I didn't catch you play that song. And then you told me you told us the story at the merch stand. And then I get the CD, I put it back in the car, I drive off, and I go, wait a minute, I know this story.
I know this from somewhere. I know this story.
So yeah, your lyrics are true.
Yeah, completely. Amazing. Yeah, this guy, he looked like, do you remember Milli Vanilli?
Yes.
He looked like he was in Milli Vanilli, like long braided hair, sharp dress, you know, not dressed, but sharply dressed. yeah, and he just said, hey, have you got a cigarette? And I went, no. And that was his green light to.
Yeah, he took exception to that.
Go at me. My girlfriend was pulling me out of this. I was in the shopping center, and I'm a complete pacifist, but I don't like inappropriate behavior, and I just, and I'm not inappropriate. Yeah, it is inappropriate. And I just thought, why, dude, someone's got to tell you that you can't be like this. And she's pulling me out of this like shopping center by my hand, and I'm going, no, I'm going to go and tell him. I'm going to tell him. She's going, no, you're going to get stabbed. You're going to get stabbed. And he's shouting and swearing and whatever. And I'm like, man, I'm going to knock you the fuck out if you don't. And anyway, we went and had a Turkish meal, and I calmed down. And I thought, I know, write a song about it.
Exactly.
Which was much better, because I would have probably ended up dead otherwise. I would have been killed.
Monetize your anger. Your anger. That's the right way to go. I had that same moment, but for me it was a very delayed. Oh wait, this is part of a song, because I didn't catch the live connection, I guess. And then when I listened to it prepping for the podcast, I had that same recollection. So very cool. Very cool.
Well,
into your stories.
Yeah, what's really cool is the fact that you remembered that story. That's. I guess everything I do is throwaway. Yeah.
But it's real too, because it's way more relatable. Like the other day, my girlfriend was at the supermarket and she came back and was telling me that some person at the cashier got like a rejection for like a 25-cent certificate thing and like started spitting all over the place.
Yeah.
And you think it's a throwaway kind of ugh moment, but when you talk about it to others, people immediately get it, the uncomfortableness and everything. So even though you feel it's throwaway, I think it's highly relatable and in some way amusing. Entertaining.
You have to laugh. Because I thought about it on the way home, and I just thought, I've been in a lot of random situations in my life, but being attacked for not smoking was
how dare you?
Even
for not smoking, but not sharing cigarettes you don't have.
Exactly. But I wanted to say to him, I was going to say, listen, I used to smoke, right? And man, I miss it. Thank you for pointing that out to me.
I'm going to buy a pack right now.
Maybe he just worked for Marlboro or something like that. And what he does.
Do you reckon he had corporate interest at heart?
Yeah, I reckon so. He's on their payroll.
That sounds like a true fact song right there.
I wish I'd have thought of that before I wrote it as well. I could have written the whole song about the secret Marlboro promo guy.
sequence songs are more and more popular nowadays. You can do a whole EP, 5 parts. Yes. It'd be great.
It was funny, not too long ago, just towards the end of last year, I was actually in a situation that really reminded me of this song as well, because I was buying big boxes for my move, and some guy comes up to me in the parking lot and goes, oh, sorry, do you have a lighter? And I go, oh, sorry, I'm a non-smoker. And I had to think of the line in that song as well, which is, it didn't used to be just your best friend who would go the extra mile or so.
Yeah.
And I go, that's an interesting combination, because A, is he going to get really aggressive with me? He didn't. And then I thought, well, I can try to help him. So I take him back to the car, and I put the car, and I get the electric cigarette lighter in the car, and I press that down and I give that to him, and it doesn't work. And I do it again. And I thought, I think I just lived up to that song.
You should have ended that with, and he stole my car.
No. I got a Turkish meal after, actually.
Yeah, there we go. There you go. Right down.
Yeah, it's something about Turkish food. It's my go-to when I'm angry. So, like, obviously, you say this is like season 4, yeah?
Yeah.
So what's been the best moments of the previous 3 seasons?
Oh, we love when guests come on with questions, first off.
I have an answer ready, but
go ahead.
It was so cool to. So the reason we were at the Pet Needs gig where we met you is because we'd interviewed them.
Yeah.
And they'd said, if you want to come to a show, just let us know.
Yeah.
And we saw that they were in Cologne. And we were going to a Billy Talent concert the next day, and then Scott went, "Well, do you want to come up to Bonn to Cologne first, and we'll go to that show?"
Yeah.
And that was a moment that really felt like, you know, wow, this has left an impact, at least for us. Mm. And then we met you there, and it continued. It was really, really, it was just such a gratifying feeling. It was really lovely.
Cool.
Scott? For me, one of the coolest highlights and kind of also strategies we've kind of figured, because I mean, we talk about everything. We're huge Formula One fans, so it's always fun to be able to just talk about things you generally enjoy, but music is a huge part of that, and we do attend a lot of concerts, and it's always really cool at any gig if the bands are at the merch stand, because you get to have a conversation.
Yeah.
And I'm always a very network type person, and just being able to have a conversation and being able to just talk about stuff relating to other professions, especially one that Toby and I definitely like to follow. It's cool to have that conversation at a concert, get to know someone, and then have that moment on the pod together. Mm. So that really leaves an impact. But if you want me to point at a specific episode or two, I would say the Pet Needs and Cigar Club interviews we both did were really, really good highlights. Yeah. They were really fun. Johnny, Cigar he talked Club, us yeah. through
yeah.
the entire first Pet Needs album, essentially, and that was really fun. And then the Cigar Club piece is also very interesting. They're a band because we've also just had bands we contacted over social media.
Yeah.
Said, hey, do you want to, bands between, you know, 1,000 and 7,000 followers, essentially, or artists of all kinds, said, hey, do you want to join? Do you want to pop on and have a conversation? And we've been in constant contact with them. They're in Canada, Ontario. We've never seen each other in person. But hopefully we'll be able to help them out when they plan on coming to Europe in a couple of years. So it's really cool to just build up that network and just stay in touch with people.
Yeah.
The connection has been the best part, especially over the COVID times.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to add, I'm trying to look it up right now, but it's taking too much attention. I think in the first season, so Slap Bang, we started this during COVID, right in the middle of it, because we couldn't see each other, right? And we had, I think it was Pedro, an electronic music artist of who I think Scott went to uni with, or that's the connection. And he did a live improvised piece on the podcast. And that's how the episode ends. So we interview him and we go, well, here's 3 minutes. And he just starts playing things and just creates a really, really cool live one-off piece of music.
That's true. That was like he did a 12-minute set at the end or something.
Was it 12 minutes? Wow.
Yeah, he resides in London now and regularly plays a couple techno radio stations there. He has a weekly slot. And it's really cool to just keep in touch. Yeah. Then we had another friend from Berlin who I studied with. He's in the Berlin scene doing music. And he joined and played a song live as well, which was, we're getting to that, but we just don't have the technology and can't expect it from our guests in any way. So hopefully at some point we can do this in one room.
And no, expect it. Expect, just tell them. Tell people.
I guess that works too.
Yeah, just be really friendly. And then right at the last minute, be cheeky. You go, oh, you do realize that you got to play a song.
Well, the same applies to you, obviously.
I was going to say we have a segment at the end where we just put people on the spot, but
that's fine. Do. That's fine. I could.
I don't know. The podcast it has a lot of cool highlights with it. The best thing is just being able to talk to people and share cool stories.
I tell you, I find that I talk about it quite a lot, especially with festivals. I do kind of look at all this as like a massive family, because there's, you know, when we saw it like during lockdown, I did two world tours during COVID that were, I was doing some live streaming and I noticed that there was people that were tuning in from like New Zealand and Czech Republic and crossing the States and excuse me, stuff like that. So I put together like a 24-hour world tour where I played at 8 o'clock at night in the local time zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I did like 15 shows or something like that. And we raised money for the first one was a young guy who sadly passed away now. But he wanted some money for like a whirlpool kind of thing. He had cancer. Mm-hmm. And then the second one that we did, it was a lot more. I got gig buddies. If you people basically in the UK, people who have carers and learning disabilities, their care finishes at 9 o'clock, so they never get a chance to go to a gig. Yeah. Or they see the opening act, which I'm fine with. but they don't get to see the headline, you know, the main thing. And so Gig Buddies is an organization that pairs people with learning disabilities that need care with someone who's a gig goer that's happy to support and volunteer to take people. Yeah. And we raised enough money. I think we sent, I think it was 16 weekend festival tickets to a festival up in Scotland. And it was the tickets and the food and the drink and the camping passes. You know, we raised enough money to send 16 people to a festival.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
That's awesome.
No, it was just and it was really cool. You know, I've got more stuff with Gig Buddies planned. And what I didn't know, there's like Gig Buddies all over the world. You know, different organizations run by different groups. So we did this thing on StreamYard. So we had adverts and we had pre-put together bits of film that explained what Gig Buddies did. I had an aeroplane that came in to land that was played for like 30 seconds going, we're in Boston, right? Okay, so I do an hour show, right? We'll see you in half an hour because I'm going to be in somewhere else in half an hour. And then like 30 seconds before the show started, the plane would come in to land again. Yeah. It was always, strangely enough, the same plane landed on the same bit of tarmac. But yeah,
because it's got you in it.
Exactly, yeah. It actually it had my... it had my logo superimposed on the side of the plane. It was great.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Streaming's going
great
well.
Great marketing. Yeah, anything's possible.
Yeah, it is. So that sorry, I got a cough. I've had...
no worries. It's the chicken nuggets.
It is. I've still got loads left. Because I feel rude eating them.
Well, that's okay.
It's a little snack.
It's a little ASMR test.
Treat yourself.
For the viewership.
Oh, can you... That ASMR... Right?
That's over.
You think... No, I've never been able to go to sleep without being able to hear or instantly be able to open my eyes. And I don't know what it was. I started to struggle going to sleep. And... I bought an eye mask with headphones in it, and now I've got like a Spotify playlist that's about 900 hours long that is rain on a tent or storm from out of an apartment window in the city and that kind of thing. And I started doing that. That I can handle, but the ASMR, there's like some of the people going, I can't get that at all.
I also listen to a ton of things falling asleep. Yeah. I don't like falling asleep in a quiet condition.
Okay.
But I listen to just people talk about random things. It doesn't even matter. But I can't do ASMR either. It has to be either like city noises or it has to be like people talking noises. If there's anything in between, like people eating, I don't know, like brushing their hair or something, it just creeps me out. It's just weird.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. It's like nails on the backboard, on like the whiteboard.
Yeah, kind of. But that's, you know, that's irritating. That's like actually irritating your ear. Whereas like these small noises, they just make me feel really small in a dark room. It's just...
I agree. Especially like, if you're in the dark, dark. For me, it's audiobooks.
Like, audiobooks, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been listening. No, and it's only 7 books. I've been listening to the same 7 audiobooks my entire life. So like 6 or 7. My parents got me Harry Potter audiobooks when I was like small. And after having read them, because I love that world. And I found a website that has them for free. So that's all I do. It's great to fall asleep. Just like listen to a chapter of Harry Potter being read.
Nice.
It's good. You fall into a different world and it just kind of, it's easy.
I like storm sounds and things like that. So I listen to them. Audiobooks, right? I'm a bit of a any kind of book. So I'm slightly trying to think of the word, regimented about New Year's resolutions and stuff like that. So I write them all down. Mm-hmm. I've normally got about 30. I normally do about 20 of them.
That's pretty good.
I'm 20? Happy with that. I'm happy.
I normally
with that,
have like two, and I barely do one of them.
Exactly.
it's always the really easy ones that get done, mm-hmm. like the fillers. I get to do those, right? But it makes that percentage at the end of the year look really good. I'm like, okay, right, we did well with 66%. But I read 112 books last year. Okay. But that's on a Kindle, a paperback, or an audiobook.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the audiobooks are fantastic. But like Paul Stanley from Kiss, his autobiography, right? I'm not a big Kiss fan. Actually about as far away from being a Kiss fan as you can get. I think they were probably relevant at some point, but no part of my life.
They have three good songs.
How many? Three?
Yeah.
Oh, what were they?
Detroit Rock City.
Yeah.
I can't name them all. There's two more. There's definitely one more.
Paul Stanley and Dream, they would be so pleased to hear that. You go, you've got three good songs. Oh, yeah, name them. Well, Detroit Rock City and maybe another
and
one.
Two more.
At least one more. There's got to be at least one more.
That's funny. Do you read a lot of music biographies or autobiographies?
No, not really. Just I've read a few. I read Rob Halford's before it, which is a really cool book. I got Bruce Dickinson coming up soon. Sorry, I'm looking at the bookshelf. That's what.
No worries.
And then I got some stuff about Van Gogh to read. I'm a big Van Gogh fan, so I've got
cool.
Yeah,
that's funny. You pointed out two of the biographies I have not read, but I've read about, you know, a lot of the others because it's a fun way to get into the world of rock and roll, I guess, or the stories, the legacies. Those are always good fun to read to kind of just dive in. The one I haven't read yet is Pete Townsend. So I'd be curious to, that one's supposed to be pretty good because he did a lot of guitar work early on. Yeah. Let's see what's behind that. I was going to segue. So you finished your thought.
No. I forgot what I was going to say. It was something about audiobooks.
All right.
Robert Johnson. There's a Robert Johnson story one. That's really cool. Especially based Robert on the Johnson. Fact that nobody really knows anything about him. So how the hell they put a 10-hour book together, I do not know. But
who was Robert Johnson?
He was a blues guitarist in the in the Delta in the 30s. And he had different groups of friends in different areas. So very few people, and they didn't know about each other. So he just toured around the Delta, and he was murdered when he was about 30 something. He was fooling around with the owner of a juke joint's wife and was given a bottle of drink. And this other big blues name guy was like, oh, you don't drink, like the lid's off it, you don't drink it. And he's like, it'll be fine. And it had rat poison in it. So it killed him. I think they found where he was buried, but he recorded 28 songs in total, two sessions or three sessions. And there's three photos of him and that's it.
And a book.
A 10-hour book.
Lots and lots of books. Because people are the legend, you know, the film Crossroads.
I've not seen it. I've heard of it.
Yeah. So whether the guitarist sells his soul to the devil at the crossroads. Okay. Yeah. And that's based on the fact that Robert Johnson disappeared as a shit guitarist and then came back and blew everybody out of the water.
Really?
Because so that's it. I feel like I actually know something during this conversation.
He's like the 112 books. No, or we just don't know.
They've worked. No,
we know
it's not
nothing.
It's just
two people.
I just normally finish these like things like this, and I walk away and go, I just rabbled shit for an hour.
And well, that's the point. No. So you fit well.
Yeah.
The problem is I also forgot what I was going
to
say.
We're going to have to mark this podcast episode as E for educational.
Not very explicit. I think we've been pretty good so far.
Fuck. Yeah.
There we go. Now it's official. What was I going to segue into? I forgot. Toby, maybe I'll hand it over to you then.
Ah! I thought you were going to segue into something. Okay, I can talk.
Yeah, I forgot what I was going to segue into.
I can talk.
Oh, sorry. I know. I'll take it again. To go all the way back, you asked us what our top moments were on this podcast, etc. So having just talked about your world tours, etc., and streaming experiences, what are like some of your tour highlights, like being on the road playing live? What are some of your highlights as a musician?
The first song I ever played at Glastonbury. I played there in 2019 and finally sort of going, I'm at Glastonbury. I'm playing like the Mecca for stuff. It's going to sound really, really corny, this, but the Pet Needs tour, there were so many reasons why those four dates in Germany shouldn't have worked. Yeah, because they're so tight as a band and as a group of friends, you know, and Johnny and George are brothers. And, you know, I'm older than them. I've, you know, got a different musical background to them. And I was really kind of like dropping into their world. And I know when we were talking about it, like Johnny was like, no, come on, like travel with us and we'll room together and stuff like that. And it'll be cool. And I thought about it for quite a long time going, this might not work. And it might be a really, really long 6-7 days traveling about, you know? And if it is obviously not working by day two, it's going to be a real miserable time.
Because you were driving the whole way from the...
Yeah.
To be clear, like you weren't on a private jet that was, you know, flown over with band equipment and everything.
No, it was...
In a rented minivan or something like that you drove over, right?
It's Pet Needs van. So it's their minibus that they've got. So I had a seat in the back corner that I didn't move from the whole time. That was it.
And that's tough. That's a long drive. For our viewers in North America, what is the drive from the UK to like Cologne, I think, was the first date, right? So that was probably the first leg. What did you drive? 10 hours?
Yeah, easily. Yeah, it was 10 hours. I mean, we left the UK I think it was about the 8 o'clock Eurostar. And we got to Cologne in time to load in sound check, in time for doors, and we didn't have time to eat until after the gig. So there wasn't a lot of spare time.
Yeah.
It was rough. Although that was weird that night in Cologne, because it seemed to like be done with the whole program fairly early. I assume that was the venue, the way it was structured.
Yeah.
But that seemed pretty interesting because at like 10:30, I believe, we were already out because everything just started early compared to what you're usually used to, I guess.
Yeah. I think I was on 8:30, which, you know, I've been on earlier and it was like half an hour after Doors, which is kind of nice because, you know, as an opening act, sometimes you're on 5 minutes after, and you know, you can be an opening act in a 1,000 capacity place and play to 8 people. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, and there's a lot of build up and a lot of excitement, and then you go, shit, that was absolutely fucking crap. I didn't enjoy it, you know. But there was none of that. It was really cool. It was, so I'd say, yeah, definitely that was a highlight, which probably there's people that know me that'll go, yeah, you're just expecting me to say that, but it was really cool. We bonded really well. We had a real, you know, good time, laughed the whole way around. Yeah, it was good fun. But yeah, there's been loads. I've been across to Germany and Holland playing before. There's a song on an album called Five Compass Lighthouse, and the song is called The Road to Krumlov. And that was, it's probably, I was going through like a really messy breakup in the UK when that happened. And I was in the south of the Czech Republic on my own in a car, traveling about gigging, which was completely mm-hmm. the right thing to do. Just like disappear with my guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But like before the gig in Prague, there was a 13-hour drive through the snow to get to Prague. And then I went south to Podibrady, then Krumlov, up to Budovice. Then I was in Weyhausen in Germany the following night, and then back to Duisburg, and back through Holland, and then back in the UK at the far side of the UK. So all mm-hmm. I did was sit in a car and drive for weeks. Yeah. You know, it just went on and on. But then I got a really cool song out of it, and I love playing that song. And it all sounds like really positive, and I'm going, God, I felt like shit. I felt just felt like driving off a cliff when I was there. It was horrible, you know.
Mm-hmm.
November and gray.
But I think that ties in really well with a lot of your music, because you say you.
What makes you, you want to drive off a cliff?
No.
No, felt really shit during it.
The fact that you say you feel you're trying to express like negative emotions or negative feelings or stories or things that you associate negativity with in that moment. But when you listen to a song as an outstander, as a member of the audience, it seems very vibey and feel goody. Kind of that Mr. Brightside effect where it's actually a really sad story, but the song somehow is actually kind of happy.
Yeah,
I felt that on a lot of different records too. Just that it was consistently like serious material.
Yeah,
but you always felt good listening to it. It didn't feel like a burden to listen to. Like there was a heavy weight behind it or anything, which sometimes can be nice as well. But it's just a good vibe. It keeps you in it. It's good storytelling.
Well, fine. I really appreciate that because I mean, at the essence of what I do, you've just said that I'm doing basically what I'm aiming to do, which is, you know, there's as many negatives or songs about a negative experience as there are positive experience, but I think on a whole, musically, I'm a reasonably positive sounding musician. There's not a lot of like people feel about Radiohead, right? Mm-hmm. You know, everyone goes, oh, I can't listen to them. It's so depressing. It's actually not. It's actually, some of it's like really quite funny. Yeah. If you look like the stories behind some of the songs, that's amusing. Yeah, there's some serious stuff. You know, when you write songs about families escaping an abusive father and stuff like that, it's not going to sound like Barbie Girl by Aqua, is it? It's going to sound like Exit Music by Radiohead. It's nice to hear that there's some serious subjects that are quite that come across in a positive way, which is doing my job.
I think it's a different way to address that, those kind of topics with people, is to kind of break them down a little bit with maybe some sense of humor, which I also noticed live. And again, having only seen you once live, and you said you, the tour in Germany was a little special or some form of highlight for you. So maybe it's changed over time or with bands, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like, especially also you being a supporting act there, you had no weight on your shoulders, and you were also talking about seriousness and like politics and like especially the UK. There was a funny rant, but it created crowd interaction. People were like thinking about a topic that, you know, is not useless to think about, and drew attention to something critically in a way as well, while creating laughs. So that was good fun. Has that always been that way, or is that just you, or is that something that kind of has increased over time?
What was your crowd interaction like before Brexit, is I think what he's asking.
I've been to so many, and it's the wrong thing to say, because musically, a lot of the gigs I've been to have been really cool, but there's been no engagement within a crowd, like between the band and the crowd. And that just bores the life out of me. So I've always tried to approach live shows with as being, and when it changed for me was about 6 years ago. I've always tried to do that, but I didn't quite get my head around how to do it, I don't think, and I still haven't completely. I'm learning, but because we always learn, don't we? I don't know if you've ever heard of a band called Niz Loppy.
No, I have not.
Okay, no. I hadn't, right? They wrote lots and lots of songs, but they wrote one song which was called the JCB song. Yeah, and it's a song about basically a yellow digger, like a road thing. Mm-hmm. It's called the JCB song, and I think the story behind it is the guy wants to be a JCB driver like his dad. And it went to number one in the UK. It was huge. And I'd never heard it because it chart, I didn't listen to it. It's not something I'd ever been involved, I'd ever been around. And I went to see them live. Somebody said, you need to come and see them live because they're brilliant. And it's a two-piece, like the singer, Luke, plays an acoustic guitar. JP, the bassist, plays an upright bass. And in an hour and a half, I walked out of that gig and I was part of the band. Yeah, they played 25% of the set was played in the crowd, completely unplugged. There was interaction in every song. They stopped songs and, you know, they got to a certain line and they'd say, oh, such, and you'd go, like, people don't stop songs in the middle of the song for them to explain a lyric. That they were doing it, and I just walked out at the end and I went, that's head and shoulders the best fucking gig I've ever been to in my life. Yeah, because I was in that band, yeah, when I left, and I tried a few of the little things at a pub gig the following night, and it just went down really well. And more than anything, I felt that was natural. Yeah, so it wasn't forced. I'm not doing this purely to get a response. So I don't plan anything before I go on ever. It's just I've got a set list that I roughly stick to. I don't think, like, because people collect set lists now, and I know the four German gigs, there isn't a set list that represents what I played. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's four set lists that are kind of, like, maybe three of the songs I played out of the six that are on there. But I changed them because I thought, right, this is dying. I need to go a different way, you know? And then in Munich, I was like, right, okay, I'll try last night. So I wrote that set list down and I'm like, oh no, back to square. What, you know, we'll go. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think maybe about 6 years ago it changed. And then just the more you do it, the more you develop and the more comfortable you feel. And I think that feeling comfortable walking off a stage in the middle of your gig and standing in the crowd and playing a song. And I mean, to be honest, I mean, I did that at all four gigs in a country that I don't speak the language in. And I shouted at people to sing along. You know, like in the UK, you'd have glasses thrown at you. Yeah.
Germans are proud of how good they can speak English usually. So,
yeah, well, they speak a lot better than my shitty German that I attempted to.
Also, we're better at following orders.
when I played in Hamburg, the guy on the sound desk told me loads of different words. Yeah. He said, oh, no, don't say that. Say this. Say that. Say this instead. Absolute bullshit. Not one of them. Right. I said things and people went,
what?
So then I'd say it again and they're like, nah. So I'd go back to the original. They're like, ah, okay, yeah, I got you.
Like, do you still have one in you?
One what?
One of the
one
words,
German
the,
phrase.
The sound guy.
No. No way. I.
You were reading them off your hand too on stage, I think.
No, I had a piece of paper. I had a piece
of
paper.
Oh, okay. You had drawn it on your hand.
next to me set list. I learned like the basics, like, you know, that I'm Enshaw, I'm from England. And then after that, I had loads of stuff. I've got a friend who lives in Duisburg who's a musician, or two, actually. And Azzy, Andre Sinner, I sent him, I said, can you help me out, Azzy? Can you tell me how I say this, this, and this in between these songs? And there's a whole story about, I think you may have seen it in Cologne, where my grandmother took me to see Iron Maiden when she was 77. And I had all of that in German as well, but it was so long. I was like, well, I'm literally going to be sat there with a piece of paper just reading this out. Mm-hmm. And that's not a good show. You know, I've got to keep it.
I'll tell you what, though, as a German, we'd love to see international artists struggle on stage pretending to, or struggling to just attempt to speak German.
We love it for like two sentences max. Like if someone goes, "Hallo Cologne, es ist so schön euch alle zu sehen," that's it. Right? If they then go,
like a Dankeschön.
In 1960 hat meine Großmutter no.
But I think in terms of what you talk to, playing in an audience specifically, like getting off the stage and playing surrounded by them.
Yeah.
I think the whole like family element, or we're all part of the band, including the audience.
Yeah.
Was really intensified throughout COVID because there was very little of it. So now, at least in Germany, it seems like a lot of bands that are international, they talk about German crowds being crazy in a specific way. I don't know if that's true or not, having mostly just gone to German concerts, but I think there it's now even more anticipated and appreciated. And it's just like, don't take any second for granted. So that's probably something that's growing. And I've noticed in every concert I've gone to, it's just like the love that's shared everywhere is crazy.
It was close to artists. It was a real, you know, having played Germany and Holland and stuff, you know, different countries have their kind of like their thing, you know, and I've always found that like German audiences will listen, but be a little bit, maybe a little bit reserved compared to Dutch audiences. Yeah. But Dutch audiences don't buy merch. German audiences do buy merch. You know, it's kind of weird, you know. Czech Republic buy no merch, but they're crazy. You know, if you're drinking vodka, I mean, I played a gig there once and this guy, he had this big cardigan on, big jumper. And he tried to give me his jumper, right? Which I thought was bizarre, but he, he disappeared before the end of the gig. It just disappeared. And he was like, you wait. And I'm like, I'm sleeping here tonight, man. I'm not going anywhere till like tomorrow morning. And he came back with a stone. Yeah. It was like a square of stone. And he said, this is for you. And I went, thank you. No idea what it was. And then the promoter came up and he said, we've got, like, it's a UNESCO heritage site. That's part of our town wall. Right? He's been up there with a hammer and smashed a lump off the town wall. Right? And it's a gift. And he said, treasure it, because it's like knocking a lump off a pyramid. You know, you just don't do it.
Prime.
So yeah. So that's in my living room. You know, it's on the side in the living room. There's a lump of pedibrity wall.
Oh my god. That's awesome.
I don't know why it's all
a great trophy.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I loved it.
Hopefully the UN doesn't listen to this podcast.
I was going to say, so we're actually UN agents and we've been watching you for 12 years.
Yeah. Our $1 billion project budget has now come to an end.
Like that. And you, Henshaw, you owe us all of it. The brilliant thing is, I'm still friends with that guy on Facebook. So if you want that stone back, right?
I can put that on record.
I can put you in contact, right, with Ludek. Right, I can't pronounce his second name, but his first name's Ludek. And he knocked that lump of stone off the wall.
Wow.
If I'm going down, I'm taking everybody with me.
Ludek's going down too.
So you having been in the Czech Republic a lot, I studied there abroad for a semester. So I spent like the last semester of my bachelor's there. And I have a great love for that city. Like so many good memories. And we've gone back a couple times since. Great.
We've had one or two artists from there on as well, right? At least one guy for sure.
At least one guy, and it was just, I don't know if you're in Prague a lot or if you have plans to return to the Czech Republic, but if you are in Prague, there's an amazing kind of secret bar that is probably the best possible venue I could think of in terms of like a bit underground, where you can properly still party with a couple hundred people. It's cool. Really good fun, and they have like, it's basically an underground, almost like a cave system. And they have an underground built-in like stage, and there's like a two-story. It's all small and cramped, but like mattresses and car seats, so really random put together. And
when you walk in, you go past security, and they give you a little key card, and you give them cash, and you get your money loaded on that key card, and then you can use that key card to purchase their home-brewed beer, which they sell in reused beer bottles.
Yeah.
Which
it also
I
looks
really
like you're
liked,
entering a prison.
Which I really liked, and Scott got food poisoning off of.
I think I just threw up. Yeah, it just wasn't the right.
Well, you were complaining about that beer very specifically for the rest of the night.
There's also other beer and other drinks, but it's a great bar and just so unique. I haven't seen it anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
So if you ever get to play that, I think it would be a cool experience. Yeah. The other guest we had on, he regularly plays that bar, and he just formed a band there as well. An American who just got stuck in Prague and loves it.
I'm gonna have to. I've got a friend in Prague who kind of fixed us with the gig that I played there and stuff like that. And he's like this, like a mountain that walks around. His name's Yaroslav, right? And he's like 9 foot tall and 18 foot wide across the shoulders and stuff like that. It's just huge. And you go, I'm safe. Yeah. Completely safe. Because Yaroslav, it doesn't matter. Like it catch missiles in his hand and crunch them up and put them in the bin. But yeah, I'll have to get the name of that place off you and speak to Yaroslav and say, hey man, let's get a gig there.
We know it as the dog bar because they have this huge Irish wolfhound running around there, but I don't know the actual name of the place.
Okay.
I'll send it to you. I do know it, but it's Czech, so I don't know how to pronounce it. It starts with it's Vachakova, I think, but I don't know exactly how to spell it. So
and also, like, the first rule of travel if you find somewhere really cool,
stay.
You don't tell anybody, because the next time the queue, you go there, there's a queue around the block to get in, and the beer is four times more expensive than it was the last time you went. So yeah, okay.
The interesting thing about this bar is funny that you say that. They don't do any real marketing. They don't even have a website. They only have a Facebook page, and it's basically just spread by word of mouth and on like Google forums or Yelp things.
Cool.
And it's by word of mouth, but it's crazy full. So there's always 1,000 people there. And you know, it's later hours. It goes pretty long, but they have all kinds of amazing musicians that just jam together. And I think it's a cool experience if you're in that area. Yeah. Anyway.
I played in a place called Znojmo in the Czech Republic once. I did a gig in a techno club. So it was like an EDM type thing, but it was a techno night. And I played half an hour acoustic set at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. Why I was booked. I know that I had a really, really good time.
Do you think they were trying to book Henshaw with a dollar sign instead of an S?
probably. It was but it was a great night, you know. Still, 4 o'clock off we went. Yeah, it was really cool. It was really good.
Prague is an amazing city, and I think, as you say, as a musician, if you find a good place, don't directly share it with everyone.
No. If I speak to any of my musician friends, I'll see it on their tour posters like 6 months later, and I'm like, you bastards. That was mine. Even if I stole it off someone else. Still mine.
So back to your music.
Yeah.
When are we going, or is there already a release plan for the next EP? When is that going to be out there? And we've talked about this new band, but we actually haven't heard the official name.
It's
Henshaw as well.
I pay the bill.
You pay the bill, so you get the name. All right.
Yeah.
So we keep the same capital letters on. There's not going to be a fourth.
No.
Henshaw with a euro sign, maybe?
No. No, it's going to be. It's okay, right. So release schedule for this year is on the 14th of February. I've got a video that we've just seen the final cut for that we shot a couple of days before I came out to with Pet Needs. For a song called Let's Start Our Story. So it's literally the frailest song I've ever written. Very sparse, probably quite Damien Rice-ish kind of feel, maybe that sort of a thing. That's out on the 14th of February. Like I say, with the video's really cool. There's lots going on in the video. There's lots of stories that are all kind of the same, all happening to different people in different times in the same place. I really like it. It's really clever. And then after that, the next release is in early May for the band Sounding EP. So that is going to be the antithesis of Super Frail song that comes out in February. The next thing that would come out as masses of guitars and big drums and stuff like that. So it's completely different. I will send you, I've got one of those songs finished. I'll send it across to you. See what you think. So then there's that, they'll tour that. Then we've got festival season, obviously. And then I'm hoping kind of right at the end of the summer, we can start putting the album together, because we've demoed it and we know it recording, you know, we've ironed out a lot of the stuff that we would do in the studio ahead of time. Because some of it we've lived with for the last, I don't know, 18 months, 2 years, you know, and I've been messing about with different versions, and people have been recording different bass lines and sending them, you know, the bassist has sent them to me, and then, right, okay, let's change this bit, chop this stuff up, you know. So maybe at the end of this year or the beginning of next year, we'll get a band album out. I know what it's going to be called, as do two people that follow me around.
Is that the title, or do two other people also know the title?
Well, they don't know that they know, but
okay.
I know that they know because I can't say it, because they had something from me, and I wrote the next album is called, and then put the like album title
right
on this thing, and they know that they know the album title, but they don't know what it is because they don't know where I've written it.
Okay.
So when it comes to releasing the album title, I'm going to hand it over to them and say, right, okay, it's here, and then they can release the album title. Not that anybody cares what my album's called. I care what my album's called, but it's kind of cool. We like doing stuff. Enough. Good. Thank you.
Album titles are cool. They're intriguing, just like art covers, like the artwork. Yeah. It's important. At least if you, I don't know, for me listening to records, I hold the artwork a lot, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah, I'm a big album fan. There's a lot of work that goes into putting an album together so those 12, 10, 14 songs flow. And you know, we're further away all the time from people that listen to a complete album.
It's also a way to get to know the musician and like the personality behind.
Yeah, yeah.
Why are you making music this way? Like what is leading you to do this? And knowing an album is the context behind each song.
I know there's one thing I haven't done it for the last album, but I used to do 20 facts about the album. On Five Compass Lighthouse there's a song called Glasgow. Now, there's a little bit of city noise at the start of that, which I recorded sitting in Kelvin Grove Park in Glasgow on Scott Hutchison from Frightened Rabbit's memorial bench. Yeah. So, you know, the singer that he killed himself a few years back. And he's got a memorial bench in the park. So I recorded it on my phone, sat there.
Yeah,
I could have downloaded a city sound from anywhere off some kind of library, but
it wouldn't be the same.
No, it's got to be legit, you know. It's got to be my thing. There's a song on there called Wren. Oh no, there's a song called 21 Trains, right? And there's a noise that happens in the song, and it's actually a train recorded at the back of my house.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until about a month after the album came out, for some reason, I counted them, these noises. And then I phoned the producer and I went, there's 21 of them. It wasn't planned, wasn't, you know, so the song's called 21 Trains. And there are, by accident, 21 trains on that thing. So, yeah, little things like that. I find it fun if nobody else does.
Yeah, I think that's really fun. That's like hiding
their little Easter eggs. Message.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like in Marvel movies, you know, like that, pick them apart and find
all
just the possible like
bits of stuff. Yeah.
But it has that same stimulus, I think. I think we've reached the point where we like to put our guest on the spot. And basically, I think we've gone from your music to your live performances to your recommendations covering the Decemberists, Nisloppy, and Robert Johnson's
Nisloppy, the JCB song.
Yep. and Robert Johnson's audiobook on his not so documented life in picture and film format. What are things that are on your mind right now?
Stay alive. I struggle a little bit with the mess that we are as a country at the moment, and the way that we kind of live for a few key things in history. And there are still people in power that will get behind that and promote that. And it's horseshit, because I used to be reasonably proud of being British, and I'm just not anymore. And, yeah, you know, until the last election, I'd never voted, because I didn't care enough about politics to condone the lies that all of them tell. And I voted in the last election. So if somebody as apathetic as me, you know, can number one turn out and vote to get the joke that is in power in this country out, and write songs about it. I mean, I spend time writing songs about things I like, or mm-hmm. things that piss me off. And I've never been that inclined to write something that was political. And it's out of sheer embarrassment now that I haven't got the answers, but I know what the answer isn't. And it isn't for us to be doing what we do.
Yeah.
You know, it's the homeless issue and the immigration alleged issue that, you know, Brexit was fought on. That kind of occupies quite a lot of my head. And I work sort of split between music, and I work for a trust that looks after, or we're advocates for people with learning disabilities. And the way that's acceptable to leave people that can't look after themselves, you know, and that is, you know, it's, that's not me sort of highlighting where that is, you know, but there are people with disabilities that don't allow them to do stuff. It's a real positive end to the conversation. You know, and we've got a country that condones the way that they're treated, and it's not right. It's not good. So that, and beer consumes me life. I'm just trying that. Yeah, it's just, you know.
No, I think it's a, don't worry about it not being a happy note. I think it's a very valid note, huh?
Just honest.
And I think it needs to be. I mean, I don't have the perspective of the UK, but I mean, a lot of places have these issues.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I used to be a carer in the UK, and I know those were during better times, and I know how hard it already was back then.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's horrible. No. So, yeah.
You know. Well, I think your message is actually positive, because it shows your underlying value is like love. And currently, politics is kind of straying away from that in some countries, and there's been a growing populism trend. So I think the underlying value is just, why can't everybody be like the music industry in the last few years, where everybody's just kind of held together and treat each other as a family? And on that bombshell, we made it positive, and I think it's time to call it to a close.
While we're nailed all class.
Yeah. Paul, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's been incredible. It's been so much fun.
Thanks, yeah, bro. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stay on for like 30 seconds after we cut the recording.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. And on that, then thank you so much to our viewership for tuning in. And we will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye. Don't close the tab, right?
Yay! Yay!